This is the Adam Gold Show.
Saturday afternoon, early evening, the Hurricanes moved past the Boston Bruins with a 3-2 victory in Game 7 on home ice. Brendan Smith was part of that, and he joins us on the Adam Gold Show. All right, take me back to that on the bench to the last 20.5 seconds and the scramble from your vantage point. What was that like going through that?
Yeah, I think those 20 seconds, they feel like 20 minutes, really. You're kind of – I wasn't on the ice, so I'm more of a cheerleader at that moment. But guys are yelling from the bench because it's a 6-on-5, and they've got an extra man and try to make sure that we've got everything covered. But it's kind of like your stomach's up in your throat, and you're praying that the guys make a block shot and get it out, and they do the job.
So you're yelling things from the bench. Do you think anybody on the ice can hear you?
They do, actually, which is wild because it's hard to explain, but even with the noise from PNC, which was so loud, and it's been my first experience a playoff game at PNC, and it's incredible how great the fans are. But you are so in tune to like your teammates' voices and and obviously Roddy's voice and everything that you don't even hear the fans, and you're so in tune to the game. So you'll hear like everybody yell like back door or a high slot. So you're kind of just yelling some things to guys. And for whatever reason, you can pick it up over 20,000 fans.
It was, it is. I remember being there for Game 3 in 2019, the Hurricanes' first trip back to the playoffs in a decade, and the noise just goes through you. You can feel it through your chest.
It's incredible.
Unbelievable. So did anybody yell to Brady Shea, just stay out there, you don't need a stick, there's only 20 seconds left?
Yeah, it did happen a little bit, but at the same time, it's kind of like you want a forward to kind of pass a stick on to the D-man.
Right.
Because then it's just safer to have a D-man with a stick in front. Obviously, you saw what happened.
Yes.
And then a forward can change and grab a stick. So that was kind of a tough bounce.
Yes.
But that's hockey. That's sports in general. And that's kind of what happens. And everybody talks about hockey being the game of mistakes or errors. And that was one of them.
Brendan Smith is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. So I want to, if you could, I don't know, what kind of conversations you had in the handshake line. That's such a hotly contested series, and at times it looked a little, a little chippy and whatnot. That's fine because it's playoff hockey. It's supposed to be that way. But what's that like, especially for a guy like Brad Marchand who can get under your skin? So what is it like going through that handshake line and shaking his hand and moving on?
Well, see, I look at it as it's one of the coolest things in sports. I think that how hard you end up kind of like tipping your hat to the opposing team for how hard that they work and they battle. So at that point, it's kind of just a recognition to both sides. Yeah, for sure. There's instances where you're still keeping the guy in check where you'll be like, good series, whatever. But you know that maybe next year you're going to settle a score or whatever it is, maybe that hit on Ranta that might have to be settled later on and stuff. But in at that moment, you kind of put it all behind you and you just kind of become a bigger man and it's been like that for a really long time. And you just tip your hat to each and every player. And I know you talk about Marchand. I mean, that's that game where he teeters that line. He's one of the best in the league at doing that. He's also an elite player. So you kind of just tip your hat to the game that he plays and how fantastic he is. And you kind of push that other rattiness behind till the following season when you can take care of it. But it's obviously incredible to be on our side shaking hands. It's a lot easier because I've been on the opposite side, and it's quite tough.
Yeah, there's no question. You'd rather be on the positive side of that handshake. The Hurricanes have now won all six Game 7 since relocation. So bring on a Game 7. Were you nervous before the game?
You always got some jitters. I've been lucky to be into. I was in two other Game 7, so I know what to expect. I went into a double overtime, which I ended up losing to Chicago, who ended up winning it all when I was with Detroit. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I've been there, so I've kind of had that feeling, and I knew what to expect, but I still had jitters, and being in the league for that long, I still had them. And I think it's more difficult on younger players that have never done it, like a Jarvis, and I thought he handled it well, but I think Game sevens are very tricky, and you don't know who's going to stand out and be that X factor. And obviously, Max Domi, he was, and it was just they come into almost a coin flip. And watching the game last night with Pittsburgh in New York, it looked like Pittsburgh had that wrapped up, and then you come up to a hot goalie, and then New York finds a way, and that's what kind of they happened. So it was great to have Maxi step in and help us win that one.
Yeah, Max Domi picked a great time for his first two career postseason goals. But I want to go to the guy who really made that play, and that's Jacob Slavin, that first pass to Domi. You know, it's funny because I had a chance to sample the ESPN broadcast, and they were talking about Jacob being such an underrated defensive player. And finally, Ray Ferraro with Between the Benches just went, he's just a great player. How do you sum up what you've seen, especially being a teammate for the first time of Slavin, what he does on a night-in, night-out basis?
Yeah, I knew Slavin was good. I didn't know he was this good. And I think it's just because Carolina can be seen as a small market team and you don't get as many games to watch him. I've always known how great he was defensively. I mean, he's got one of the best sticks in the league. He's so positionally sound. The area that I didn't know is how gifted he is offensively. And that play, a little sauce pass into Max Domi, he makes the other play to Teravainen. I think those plays that you don't normally see, and he gets all the credit defensively, but I think he's underrated offensively as a defenseman. And I think it shows you how great he is and well-rounded his game is. And we're lucky to have a player like that.
He was tremendous. And you know, you guys had you have a bunch of former Rangers, going to take on, it's great that it worked out that way. Jesper, Brady Shea, Tony DeAngelo, can just sum up the opportunity to play your former team, and eventually we'll go back to Madison Square Garden, although hopefully only twice. What are you anticipating from this series?
I'm anticipating a hard battle. I'm speaking for the other guys, but I know for myself is that I'm itching to get after this. I think there's a little bit of a bone to pick as well with the Rangers, because of either the players have been traded or let go or not re-signed. So there's that extra oomph for us to want to settle that score. And it's fun. It's going to be exciting. And like you said, it would be nice to just only go back there for two, but with the new, like with the parity in this league and them being a great team, we'll have to see how that goes. But we want to make sure that we keep our foot on the pedal and keep coming, and we just wanted to play a little bit better on the road, because we weren't happy with how things went against Boston, obviously.
How much of that was, in a way, nerves is not the right word, but game one, I thought you guys were, or actually game three in Boston, I thought you guys were really good until the shorthanded goal, and then with a 2-1 lead late, in the second period in game four, again, I thought you guys were the better team. Can it just get away that quickly?
Sometimes. Obviously, I agree with you. I think you nailed it. I think we were on our stuff, especially in game three. And a shorthanded goal like that, they hurt for sure. And you know what? More than anything, in playoffs, it does come whether you want to say it or not, it comes down to special teams a lot because it is so hard to score 5-on-5 in the playoffs. Everything's so tight. You've done your research. You've done your all your studying. You know each player. You know what their tendencies are. So it's hard to score a 5-on-5, and it does come down to special teams. And when you lose that battle, it becomes that much more difficult to win the game. So I think looking back at those games, that was the area where we kind of let it get away from us. And we're coming against another opponent in the Rangers who have a very good power play and have a very good goalie. So if we can do our little things and make sure that we check with our feet and not with our sticks and stay out of the box, I think that will just ensure us to be on the right side of each game. But yeah, you're right. I think you nailed it, but it does come down to those special teams. And if we can win that battle, we'll be fine.
Same team that committed 9 penalties in game 4 committed 1. I don't remember which one it was, Brendan. I'm trying to remember the game 7 penalty. I don't remember. You don't have to bring it up.
I don't remember it either.
is that because the game was called differently, or was this just we are not putting ourselves in that position?
I would say maybe a little bit of both. I think the games get called differently, especially in a game 7. You'll notice that refs will put the whistle away a little bit more due to the fact that they don't want to be the deciding factor, and I agree, and I like that. But if there's like something that is obscene or whatever, you normally call that. But other than that, they kind of put it away for game 7. And I've noticed that in watching games and my three game 7s. But I think for us, you can't argue 9 penalties is way too much. Even 6 is too much. So that was on us, and we have to do a better job of that. And that will get us. That will be our downfall if we find a way to keep getting penalties. So it's a talk in the room for sure. And we'll continue to make sure that we take care of our careless sticks or whatever it is at the time, and then make sure that we play hard and do the right things.
I think my favorite part of game 7 was Tony DeAngelo trying to calm Vincent Trocheck down, which like is sort of role reversal, but that was cool. Final thing for Brendan Smith, best dude on the current Rangers, and one we'll be watching for you rubbing out along the wall.
I was very tight with Chris Kreider.
Okay.
Obviously a very elite player, but if I get the chance, I'll for sure be trying to take him out. So
okay.
That's when you get to this stage, you kind of put your friendships on hold.
Well, there's no question. We saw it with Brady Shea and Jesper Fast in the bubble.
Correct.
And I'm glad that those two guys get along, because we didn't see Jesper the rest of that series. And man, he is such a good player. That by the way, you're the captain, Jordan Staal. Does he have emotions? Does he get too? I mean, he's just constantly at zero.
He does. He's very stoic. And he's almost like a robot, because he just does everything right always.
It's annoying, so isn't it?
It can be a little frustrating when you just see like a perfect human like him. But when you need the emotion, he'll bring it, and that's what I like. I mean, obviously he's one of those guys that shows by example, and that's an incredible quality. I wouldn't say he's the most vocal, but when he has to be, he is. And it's incredible, because when he speaks, you listen. And that's a leadership quality, CEO kind of quality, and he's got it. So we're lucky to have a great captain like that. And to be honest, you don't win everything without a great captain. So we're lucky to have an amazing player and an amazing person as in Jordan.
Brendan Smith, I appreciate your time, my friend. We'll talk to you throughout. Good luck against the Rangers in game 1 on Wednesday night.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right, Brendan Smith here on the Adam Gold Show. We got to the first intermission. It's halftime. We are just about midway through the entire thing, so it's time for Orange Wedges. We didn't have to put any added time up on the board, although I will say that even in our youth game on Wednesday night,
yeah,
they put 2 minutes of, like, I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, our guys want to celebrate.
They put 2 on the board.
What are we doing? Don't do that to us.
They're kids. Come on now.
Entertainment. All right, what do you have for me, sir?
All right, as you mentioned earlier with Will Brinson, Panthers had rookie minicamp. They had a couple players there on tryout that they signed to the team. Offensive tackle Wyatt Miller and tight end Jared Scott.
Yeah.
I guess they impressed coaches over this weekend.
Expecting big things out of both.
Yes, can't wait for Wyatt Miller to be your starter at week 7.
By the way, did you... I think I might have even sent this to you. Greg Cosell, who does a lot of player evaluations, I think with NFL films, but does a lot of independent stuff. He thinks, was it Cade Mays, the offensive guard that the Panthers drafted out of Tennessee?
Oh, in the 6th round, yeah, that offensive guard. Yep.
He believes that he is a starter
in
the NFL. Look. Again, for me, it's about building offensive line continuity and depth. I'm not optimistic about the season, but I am optimistic about the Panthers' offensive line. And if it's good, they have a chance. That's all you can ask.
As a result of the tryouts, the team did waive cornerback Troy Pride Jr., with a failed physical designation. He was their 4th-round pick in 2020, but he missed all of last season with a knee injury. Did start 8 games as a rookie, but unfortunately never, I guess, fully recovered from the knee injury.
Well, it's all about C.J. Henderson.
Yes.
Isn't it?
It has to be.
Kind of has to be, doesn't it?
All right, a few other things to note here. Here's a little soundbite fun for you. I don't know if you saw, Albert Pujols actually had his first pitching appearance
of his career. Highlights of that.
Yeah, the St. Louis Cardinals were up 15-2, so they were up 13 runs. And then Evan Longoria was up at the plate against Albert Pujols, and Longoria got the first hit. And let's say Evan Longoria wanted the ball.
No, Evan Longoria hooks one into left, so Albert gives up his first hit. We need a strikeout. Right? We got to have a strikeout. Hey! That's got to be on the Hall of Fame resume.
Longoria having some fun with Albert on that one. He wants the ball.
That's true.
I love it.
And Pujols threw the ball to the dugout. Let him keep it.
You know, why not? I mean, Albert is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
This is my hit off of Hall of Famer Albert Pujols.
Yes. I love it. So it was a fun moment for a team that was getting blown out.
He gave up a home run.
He did.
That was a bomb.
All right, Ric Flair. You know I'm a big wrestling fan. Ric Flair is going to be wrestling his last match again. So he initially was supposed to retire at WrestleMania 24 back in 2008. That was against Shawn Michaels. But he had since wrestled.
Wait. What year was he supposed to retire?
2008.
Okay.
He's 73 right now.
Right.
2008, he wrestled 16 more matches after that, including what was supposed to be, again, his final one against a longtime rival, Sting, back in September of 2011. So he's actually been in the ring training with Jay Lethal, who currently wrestles for AEW.
Sure.
And it's going to be at the Nashville Fairgrounds, and the event's going to be titled Jim Crockett Promotions Presents Ric Flair's Last Match. So it's a throwback again to Jim Crockett Promotions that was very big here in the South, especially here in North Carolina, where Ric Flair really made his name before obviously doing what he did further in his career with WWF, now WWE, and WCW. But Jim Crockett Promotions really was where he, when the NWA is really where he came up. So again, July 31st at 6 o'clock, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, will have his final match.
I don't even know what to say
about
Ric Flair wrestling again. Like, I don't even want to disparage the whole sport by saying, who cares? I mean, they're not going to kill him.
Yeah.
I'm sure people will like it.
I'm sure they will, too. Again, as a wrestling fan, it's like, I don't know if I want to see this.
He doesn't even woo anymore very well.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's... 73 years old.
You can't woo when you're 73.
No.
Best you could do is woo.
Yes.
That's all you got. I go, all I have is a woo.
That's really
That's
about it.
It's unfortunate.
Also, in the world of entertainment, Norm Macdonald, who passed away not long ago, actually filmed a secret stand-up set in his living room before his passing.
Really?
Yes, and it is going to be airing on Netflix May 30th.
Like, this is next level.
Yeah.
So, when did he record this?
I'm not entirely sure, but it, obviously just before his passing, but sometime during lockdown and his passing, he recorded a secret stand-up set in his living room. And Netflix is going to air that May 30th.
That is mind-blowing.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. It caught me off guard.
That's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Look, I'm not even a huge Norm Macdonald fan, right? It's just, I'm not knocking Norm Macdonald. Stand-up comedy, to me, stopped being a thing. When I was younger, look, I grew up with George Carlin.
Yeah.
I grew up with Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Became Eddie Murphy. Right? Those types of comedians were my thing. It's just not the same for me, but holy cow. That is
I'm definitely going to tune in and watch it for sure.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of reminds me of after Tupac passed away, we still got his like albums and tracks after his passing.
That, I mean, you know, Prince has a whole bunch of stuff that he recorded that was never released, and they released some of it posthumously. It's just very difficult to get anything out of, like, he did it at home.
Yeah.
Like, I'm assuming no audience.
Yeah. Maybe family.
Pets?
Yeah, maybe family.
Pets don't react very well. My dog never laughs at any of my jokes.
Mm.
Zero. So there you go. All right, good.
All right, a few other things here. In the NFL, it looks like Jaire Alexander resetting the market for defensive backs, getting a record-breaking signing bonus of $30 million as part of a four-year, $84 million contract. He is in the fifth year of his rookie option.
Sure.
So, yeah, congrats to him, making a lot of money.
Congrats to anybody who's cashing in.
Yeah, good for him. Speaking of cashing in, it looks like Jack Nicklaus was offered. This is quoting from him. This is what Nicklaus said. I was offered something in excess of $100 million by the Saudis to do the job probably similar to the one Greg is doing, referring to Greg Norman. He said, quote, I turned it down once verbally, once in writing. I said, quote, guys, I have to stay with the PGA Tour. I helped start the PGA Tour.
That is absolutely
true. $100 million.
Jack Nicklaus doesn't need $100 million. By the way, neither does Greg Norman.
Yeah.
So this whole, the whole thing is just so, it's so seedy to me. It's just so dirty.
Yeah.
It's also, look, I know how people get about, well, they're independent contractors. The goal of this series is to damage the PGA Tour. The goal is not to provide additional opportunity for golfers, because it's not. It's not providing additional opportunity for golfers. All right? There's plenty of opportunity for professional golfers. Tons of it. There are tours all over the world. What this is a giant money grab, which is fine. But it's also for Norm. Norman would have no business as part of this if it wasn't for his 30-year vendetta against the PGA Tour. That's what it is. It's all it is. It's Norman being bitter for three decades. And we can get into it a little bit later on, but that's all it is. It has nothing to do with anything other than Norman figuring out a way to get back at the PGA Tour. I'm not even going to get into the Saudi stuff.
Yeah.
But that's all this is. It's Norman trying to stick it to the tour. Because, and I'll be honest, I think the tour stuck it to him. So I understand Norman's point of view. But that's all this is. It's a vendetta. Nicklaus has no vendetta.
All right, final thing I have here. So the Academy Awards actually had Twitter polls for the Oscars inaugural Fan Favorite and Cheer Moment Awards.
What?
Yes, so they had a Twitter poll back from the Oscars. So the Fan Favorite Award was voted on for Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, and the Cheer Moment Award was for Zack Snyder's Justice League, respectively. So, coming to find out, this is according to The Wrap. Apparently, they were chosen via a Twitter poll conducted, again, by the Academy. But reports, again, by The Wrap, citing a couple of findings that basically Twitter bots were used for voting for Zack Snyder's films. So I guess it may have been like some sort of autonomous web programs, again, which cast thousands of fake votes for Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead and Zack Snyder's Justice League. So, yeah, that's the reason why they won these, is because apparently they were, again, some people, I'm not sure who it was, but according to the hashtag analytics tracking tool called TweetBinder, again, a lot of those polls, the votes came from Twitter bots.
All of this will be taken care of when Elon Musk runs Twitter.
That's really what we're getting to.
Yes.
Here,
as soon as Elon is involved and we can clear out all the bots, everything will be straight up.
Yeah. I'm okay with clearing all the bots off of Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm okay with getting rid of all those bots and stuff.
It's sort of like being ahead of steroids.
Yeah.
Like, nah, they're always good. The bots and the hackers are always going to be ahead. That's why we have monthly cybersecurity training.
Yeah, we do
here at the company. All right, when we come back, I will find out how much damage Hayes Permar did to my total. Well, he was in this chair for 4 days. We'll see if Dennis is back to even. No, he's not. Next. Tomorrow on the program, our friend Jordan Cornett from the ACC Network. We will talk with him about, well, just the developments, stuff we mentioned at the top of this hour, about the ACC relaxing, or that the NCAA relaxing the requirements that would force divisions in order to have a conference championship game in football. Also, Linda Cohn from ESPN. We'll talk a little NHL playoffs with her. Christine Brennan will also drop by. We have the PGA this week and a lot of other things to discuss. So we have some cool people to talk with tomorrow. And then looking forward to the start of the series on Wednesday. Real quick, before we get into our wagers, Dennis Cox, and a lot of people asked me yesterday during Rangers-Penguins Game 7, who would I rather see the Hurricanes play? Mm-hmm. And my answer to that was, I don't care, and I really don't. First of all, I don't know why. Maybe that's my superstition.
That you don't care?
No, not that I don't care. That wanting a certain matchup, it never works out the way you think it's going to. So there is a prevailing thought that Milwaukee, to avoid Brooklyn in the first round of the NBA playoffs, basically bounced the final game, which gave Boston the 2 seed and Milwaukee the 3. Well, gave away home court advantage for Game 7, if that mattered. Milwaukee had home court advantage in Game 6. They still got beat, so it probably doesn't matter. But I prefer to think of it as that if you try to orchestrate your own matchup, and that's not what the Hurricanes would have been doing anyway, but if you try to orchestrate your own matchup, you generally pay that price. Just play it out.
Yeah.
Let it happen. Chips fall, you know, the whole cliche. But the truth is also that the Hurricanes were really good against both teams.
Mm-hmm.
They were better than Pittsburgh in all 3 meetings. They were better than the Rangers in all 4. And they went 5-2 combined in those games.
Yeah.
They were just better teams. Then, so, doesn't mean that the Hurricanes are going to win this series. I think they are the better team than the Rangers. The Rangers are a little bit more dangerous offensively, although the 7 of the top 9 teams are in the final 8. Hurricanes are the 7th, I think the 9th best offensive team in the league.
Okay.
The Rangers are 16th. Huh. Hmm. Hurricanes had a better offense than the Rangers?
No.
Interesting.
No, that's what I heard.
Interesting.
That's not what Twitter told me.
So, anyway, that's... I really don't think it matters. Both, you know, Tristan Jarry, who'd be the goaltender this series, he was an all-star. Igor Shesterkin is an all-star. He's going to win the Vezina. Might even get... did they announce Hart?
He's a Hart finalist.
He's a Hart finalist. So, yeah, it's all good. I don't mind the Hurricanes taking on the Rangers. All right, let's play some bets, shall we?
Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you one.
I have no idea if these totals are up to date. I know Hayes Permar, who sat in this chair last week, texted me at one point talking about how great he was doing for us, and he apparently didn't, because we're down significantly from when I left. So according to the sheet here, it says we are at plus 898. Is that accurate?
That may have been going into Friday's bets. But I did know he bet on the money line, the Canes to win, which was minus 135. So he put 135 units on
the
Canes.
So we got 100 out of that.
So there's 100 out of that, and I can't remember what his other
bets
were.
That bad, the rest of it. I have you at minus 1,500?
Yeah,
Is that true?
I stink.
All right. Get started.
I got a couple bad beats here from this weekend. So I had the Canes at minus 1.5. And of course, they give up a goal with 21 seconds left.
Stay on the ice, Brady.
Yeah, there's that. So that was a plus 190. And I had a parlay for Sunday's lacrosse games in the NCAA tournament. I had a parlay. Got two out of my three legs on my parlay correct, except for Georgetown had a blow against Delaware.
Against Delaware.
Yeah.
Crazy goal, too.
Yeah, I know, within the last 8 seconds of the game. So Delaware blew that for me. And that was a plus 667. I blame Georgetown.
Gosh.
I blame Georgetown. Never trust people in D.C.
No, that is true.
All right.
Where are we starting?
I'm going to go EPL.
Sure.
I'm going to go Newcastle plays Arsenal today. I know you mentioned it before the show. Arsenal needs a win.
Has to get 3 points.
They don't. Draw plus 310.
You have draw plus 310?
Newcastle and Arsenal draw plus 310.
Their back line for Arsenal, very, very compromised with injury and suspension. I say Arsenal does get the win, but that's not what I'm betting. I am betting Odegaard to score for Gunners today at plus 310. Odegaard will get a goal today, and Arsenal, at plus 310 for Arsenal. But they have to win. They absolutely have to win. All right, you go next.
All right, I'm going to go baseball because there's no hockey or basketball to bet today. So I'm going to go to the world of baseball. The Tampa Bay Rays hosting the Detroit Tigers at plus 105 on the run line. Minus 1.5 runs for the Tampa Bay Rays. So plus 105.
Plus 105. All right. I am also going to do baseball.
Okay.
Baltimore Orioles hosting the New York Yankees tonight.
There you go.
Yankees, I think they have the best record in baseball. They lose to the Baltimore Orioles today.
Oh, very nice.
Give me the O's plus $1.60 on the money line.
All right. Juventus is also in action today.
Yes.
They play Lazio. Juventus, my apologies.
Yeah, all right.
Juventus against Lazio today. Give me Juventus plus 115 to win.
Plus 115 to win. All right. Go Juve. And I am going to close it out with one series price in the NHL playoffs. Give me the longest odds on the board.
Okay.
The St. Louis Blues to beat the Colorado Avalanche in their conference semifinal series at plus 275.
All right.
I will take the St. Louis Blues. Two of the three best offensive teams in the league, the Blues actually have scored more goals than the Avs this year. Tampa's a plus 130 to beat Florida. I like Tampa to win that series. St. Louis at plus 275. I like them. Carolina's, obviously Colorado's the biggest favorite. Carolina is the second biggest favorite on the board.
All right.
At minus 210. So, good there. But Edmonton-Calgary is very, very intriguing. Edmonton is plus 165, but I like the Calgary Flames in that series, the Battle of Alberta. It's, in a way, it's sort of like Duke, Carolina. Like, those two cities don't like each other.
Yeah.
In Edmonton and Calgary. Or is it Calgary? No, actually, it's Calgary.
Yes.
So, but I'll take, I think the Flames are going to win that series. So I'll take them.
They should win that series.
This is the Adam Gold Show.